Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and this is your host, Yvonne Mason, and that ad never ceases to make me laugh. This is Off the Chain, and those of you who have followed me all these many weeks know that we call the show Off the Chain because it is off the chain. I interview a variety of people, from musicians to authors to artists to activists to retired cops to you name it, and I will interview them. But it has to be with decorum, because even though we're off the chain, we do have good taste. So if you want to be on my show, you contact me on Facebook, or you contact me at YvonneMason84@yahoo.com, and we'll get you on the show. This show started out as a five-year dream, and it has finally come to fruition. And I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, now we have over 3,000 listeners between the live show and all of the podcasts that this thing goes up on after the live show. So, yeah, this thing took off and is running. I am booked through the middle of January. I have back-to-back shows between now and the silly season, which is that time between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So if you want on the show, I don't ask payment for you to come on the show. I don't charge my guests to come on my show. It is my idea of paying it forward, because there have been so many people that have helped and supported me on my journey and in my passion of writing and publishing and now doing the show. And one of those beautiful people that I absolutely love with all of my heart, that has been part of my journey, and I have been part of her journey, is my guest tonight, author and Goodwill Ambassador of Mississippi, Patricia Neely Dorsey. Now, she is a 1982 graduate of Tupelo High School in Tupelo, Mississippi, which is located in beautiful Red Clay Hills of Mississippi, and the birthplace of the king, the one and only Elvis.
Woohoo!
She received her Bachelor of Arts degree in psychology from Boston University in Boston, Massachusetts. Now, after living for almost 20 years in Memphis and working in the mental health field, she returned to her hometown in 2007. She lives in Tupelo with her husband, James, her son, Henry, and a miniature schnauzer, Happy. She is still an active member of the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority, and she's an avid reader and a very passionate writer. Now, this is a quote from her. She says, "I have always considered myself a Goodwill ambassador for Mississippi and the South. In college, my nicknames were Tupelo and Mississippi. Whenever my friends saw me coming, they knew that there would be some type of discourse about Mississippi and the South soon to follow. Hoping to clear up their many misconceptions," and ladies and gentlemen, there were many, "and preconceived notions. Yes, in Mississippi they do wear shoes. They might not wear them all the time, but they do own shoes. She believes that they can bridge many gaps of misunderstanding across regional, racial, cultural, generational, and economic lines simply by telling and sharing stories. Patricia travels all around the state speaking at schools, churches, libraries, and various civic organizations delivering the message of a positive Mississippi and a positive Southern experience. Her first book of poetry, which is one of my favorites and now is my mother's, and I no longer have the book because she won't give it back to me, Reflections of a Mississippi Magnolia, Life and Poems, was published in February of 2008. Now, this is what it says. You are sure to chuckle and laugh out loud at times and maybe even shed a crocodile tear or two, but you are most certain to relive, if only in your mind, some of your own most beautiful childhood memories, whether from north, east, south, or west. You will be able to relate to some of the simple joys of times past. Then she added to her quiver of arrows and wrote My Magnolias, Memories and Musings and Poems. That was published in 2012. And with that being said, I want to welcome my friend, my sister, and my partner in this journey, Miss Patricia Neely Dorsey. Dorsey, welcome, Patricia. It's been a long day, honey.
Yes, I understand. I'm so happy to be here.
I am glad we're finally together here. I know. People don't realize we've known each other for a long, long time. But
absolutely.
We've never met, but we've always had this bond. You want to tell the world about our strong bond?
Well, yes, we started in the beginning. I was new on Facebook and new in the social media world and new with book publishing. And how did we run across each other?
I think it was preordained. If you want to know the truth.
Absolutely. Well, we are definitely sisters in Christ, and we found that out by some things in the poems, and you know, and members of the Church of Christ, and it's just exciting to know that.
Very, because we have a sisterhood that most people wouldn't understand. Even though we've never met, we are still sisters in spirit.
Absolutely. And that was an immediate connection. That was an immediate connection, and we had so many things in common, and your mother was saying things about the poems like, I love this, and I understand what she's saying. So it's just been great from the beginning.
And I think it was my mother that said, she sounds like she's a member of the church. Why don't you find out?
Yes,
so
that's
I
what
think
you
that's
told
how
me
we
that.
That's how it came about.
That's how that came up.
Yeah, she said, she writes like that. And I'm thinking, okay, Mother, I'll ask her. So I did, and here we are, sister.
Right.
So
we were in some writing groups and some groups, I believe, on Facebook or whatever, and we just talked about sharing things about promoting books and about writing books, and I am just like completely computer illiterate with all kinds of things, and you were giving me tips on how to do this and how to do that, and I think you wrote for me like a press release and just helping me, and we just helped each other.
Yes, we did, and that's the way it should be.
Absolutely.
Because no man is an island, and speaking of islands, let's talk a little bit about your personal history and your journey from leaving Tupelo and trotting off into the big bad world of north of the Mason-Dixon line to those
absolutely
people in Boston.
And people ask me all the time about that in interviews. How did you get way up in Boston, and how did you just end up there? Well, the thing is, my brother was there before me. He's 3 years older than I am, and he went to Boston University. And it is a really long story because I really wanted to go to Brown University, which is in Rhode Island. So I had applied and everything, went up there for an interview, and the lady was – it was just a perfect interview. And I was like, oh, it's a shoe-in. I know I'm in. And after it was over, she said, "I have to tell you, that was a wonderful interview. Just off the record, how did you find out about Brown University way down in Mississippi?" Now, this, you know, and I'm kind of young then, of course, like 18, so I wasn't as tempered as I am now. And I just lost it. I could not believe an intelligent person, supposedly intelligent, is going to ask me, like, we're in like some deep, dark, third world country with no television. I said, we have televisions, we have newspapers, we have, you know, I just could not believe it. But after I got through with my little tirade, I got back on the train to go back to Boston and said, okay, what's my second choice? Because I know I'm not getting into Brown. So, like I said, I've been taking up from Mississippi and the South all of my life, way before I started writing, and long before I started ever writing a poem. I wrote my very first poem February 14, 2007, so I was in my 40s when I wrote my very first poem. And I just put something on Facebook the other day. It's never too late to dream a new dream, set a new goal, like the quote says. So I had no inclinations of writing or publishing a book or anything like that. I just woke up out of my sleep, I'm telling you, February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2007, with this poem just swirling around in my head. I got up, thought about it for a second, and said, golly, is that something that I read? Is it something that I'm just is stuck in my mind or whatever? But I scribbled it down really fast, and I looked at it, and I'm like, wow, that's just mine. I was just totally amazed.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
And most of the poems have come that way.
Yeah, they do. That's what mm-hmm. happens when I write. The voices in my head won't shut up. And
right,
I'm laying there
right.
with my eyes wide open going, please let me just sleep an hour, and then I'll get
mm-hmm,
up and write,
mm-hmm,
I promise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I know that's what happens with you with the poems. They start swirling and whirling and dancing and
absolutely.
Prancing and aggravating the daylights out of you until you've got to put it down on paper.
Absolutely.
What made you decide to publish?
Well, like I said, I had no inclinations of publishing a book or writing a book. I never thought of it. It just never entered my mind. But after that first poem, the poems just started to flow and flow and flow. And they just were just coming and coming. And most of the poems that I wrote, I told one of my first interviews, that, you know, I would write these poems. Most of the poems were written in my car. I would say the first book, 80% of all those poems were, like, written and scribbled down in my car because they would just be coming like that. And I have poems on the back of State Farm receipts and Walmart receipts and scraps of paper, and they're turning upside down. They're, like, scribbled to the side and, you know, things like that. And that's the way I wrote them. But by the time in a few months when I came home to visit my parents, I had a thick folder of over 300 or 400 poems. I know it had to be at least that many. I brought them home. I think it was like the Easter break. I came home, and I wanted to show them, especially to my father, because that's where I got the love of poetry from, and I think the rhythm of my poems. Because when I was growing up, and when my father was growing up, first of all, the old school, they used to recite a lot of poems in school. They used to have to memorize a lot of poems in school. So he had this whole arsenal of things that he had memorized, and he loved poetry. So when I was a little girl and he was getting ready to go to work, he would recite poetry to me all the time. And one of our favorites was When Melindy Sings, which is a poem by an African-American poet of the early 1900s, Paul Laurence Dunbar. And he would recite this poem to me all the time. And as I got older, I'd recite some of it, and he'd do his part, and I'd do my part. But that's how I started to love poetry, and I wanted to show him these poems. And the first thing he told me after he read the poems, he was like, "Don't you have a job? When do you have time to write all these poems?" And we just burst out laughing. I'm like, "I don't. I don't take time out of my job or anything to write the poems. They just come. I don't sit down like in a quiet place and say, I'm writing. They just come." And I was a case manager, so I did a lot of car work, like visiting clients. And on my way and in the car, I call it my think tank, because when I started turning the radio off and was in a quiet place, they would just come. They would just come out. So that's how that all started.
I firmly believe that, and of course, you being a student of the Bible also, we are given talents.
Yes, absolutely.
And God tells us that if we don't use those talents, and the parable of the different people with the different talents, if we don't use those talents, we lose those talents.
And I was one who always was wondering, God, all these people have these, like in a prayer, really, like, God, all the people that I see around me have all these amazing talents. I can't even cook. You know, I mean, I could not put my finger on something that I did really, really well. Do you know what I mean? I think I'm an intelligent person. I'm a fun person and all that, but I never could put something that I said, wow, this is what I do. This is who I, you know, what I can do. And it was just revealed to me, basically, you know, through these poems, that this is what I do, and I'm good at promoting a positive Mississippi, and I was doing that way before I wrote one poem. And the books just gave me a platform to do what I love, to do what I'm passionate about, and I've been doing it since I was a teenager. But going back to that question you were asking, why did I publish, how did I publish? Because I started sharing a few of the poems with a couple of my friends, and one of my friends was like, you need to do something with that. And I was like, what do you mean do something with it? That's how far away I was from thinking of anything about publishing or a book. I was like, what do you mean do something with it? I mean, I'm sharing it. I shared it with you. I shared it with my parents. So, I mean, a few months went on, but then we moved back to Tupelo. So I wrote my first poem February 14, 2007. But we moved back to Tupelo in August 2007. So a friend of mine who is the brother of the late Little Milton, whose birthday was yesterday, and we've been friends since I was a teenager, just by chance, and you know it was not by chance, it was just God. Like I said, things in your life just happen. When I came home, he had a book signing at a bookstore here, Reed's Gumtree Bookstore. He had a book signing in December of 2007. And if I hadn't been living here, if I wouldn't have known that he wrote a book, because we had not been in touch since I was a teenager almost. So he had I said, Mama, look, John is having a book signing at the bookstore. I have got to go talk to him. So I went down there, talked to him about his book, and just reuniting with him. And I was like, John, I have all of these poems, and I just want you to look at them and tell me what you think and what should I do with them. He looked at them. He said, okay. And the next day he called me back, and he took them with him. Look, he said, yeah, I'm going to get you with my publisher, and you need to publish these poems. And that's how it all came about.
See, God works in mysterious ways. His wonderful
form. It does. And that was in December, and the book was published in February.
And speaking of, let's titillate our audience, shall we?
Yes.
Oh, and ladies and gentlemen, if you want to talk to this beautiful sister of mine, you can call in at 516-387-1756. 5 years ago, I lost my blood sister to acute myeloid leukemia. And because of sisters like Patricia, I still have sisters. So I'm not sisterless. I have my sisters. But I want to read Patricia's poem. I have a couple to read, but this one is called Meet My Mississippi. And this
poem
will tell you how passionate she is about this absolutely beautiful southern state. And yes, she and I both are from the south. I'm from Georgia. She's from Mississippi. And
right,
we're proud southerners. Very proud.
Absolutely.
So, Meet My Mississippi by Patricia Neely Dorsey. You want to read it?
Yes,
you want
I would
me
love
to.
Read
to. It? Go
Either
ahead
one.
And read it.
I, w- I would love to read. But I want to say about the poem that it's up for consideration as the state poem is going to be considered when the legislature convenes in January. It will be submitted as a bill, and hopefully it will be the state poem of Mississippi next year.
we're gonna talk more about that, too, because I think it's going to pass.
Faulkner's Sanctuary, Eudora's home state, Elvis's birthplace, the bulk of the trace, sprawling beaches along the Gulf Coast shore, one blues man's crossroads, an inspiration for more, an abundance of history, tradition, and folklore, warm front porch welcomes with a wide open door, a ride down the mighty river on the American Queen, and some of the most beautiful countryside that you've ever seen. She's music and melodies and the mockingbird songs by valor and arms and faith ever strong. She's magnolias blooming around Jackson's Capitol Dome and the sweet scent of honeysuckle that forever says home. She's my Mississippi. She's the hospitality state. Go, Mississippi, your true state of grace.
That gives me chill bumps. Every time I read this poem, because I can see it in my eyes. I have been through Mississippi, but I've never stayed in Mississippi. That is on my bucket list because it is one of the most beautiful states in the entire country.
It really is. It really is. And I'm not saying that just because I'm here and you're testifying to it. It really is. It is it's some of the most beautiful countryside that you have ever seen in your life. And people come from all over the world to ride down the Natchez Trace. And, most of the Natchez Trace is in Mississippi. Some of it is in Tennessee, but it goes from Nashville to Natchez. And people come from all over just to see the beautiful Natchez Trace and to ride down it and bike ride and everything.
I love the poem because it incorporates
so much of everything about Mississippi, just a little bit of sprinkling of everything about the Gulf Coast is down, the beaches we have, and Mississippi has the longest man-made beach in the whole world.
Wow, that I did not know.
A lot of people don't know that. And I put a lot of other things in there because the magnolia tree, everybody should know, is our state flower, our state tree, and the magnolia flower is our state flower.
And anybody who has not ever smelled a magnolia flower and held one in your hand, honey, it's heaven on earth.
It is. And it is the most magnificent-looking flower you have ever seen. Just so big and fluffy and showy. I think I have 4, 5, or 10 poems about the magnolia. They are just so mesmerizing.
And they last a long time.
They're very delicate.
Now let's go back to this poem because you are the goodwill ambassador for Mississippi. Tell my audience how you came about getting that title.
Yes, I was proclaimed as an official Goodwill Ambassador for Mississippi by the governor in 2015. The way that it happened was, and I was always telling people, don't y'all think I need to be an official Goodwill Ambassador? Because I've always, like I said in all of my writings and everything, when I talk to people, I've always considered myself a Goodwill Ambassador for Mississippi. But I wanted to be recognized by, our state just to say that this is what I'm doing. This is what's going on, and I want y'all to know that I am proud to be a Mississippian, and I want people to know in our legislature and people around the state to know this is how I feel, this is what I've been doing, and this is what I'm going to always do. And one of my slogans is always, always celebrating the South and promoting a positive Mississippi, and that's what I do. But anyway, like I said, there are no chances that happen in the world. I gave one of my books to one of our state representatives. We were talking about some things that had to do with something else in his business with tree cutting, believe it or not. So we were talking about just general conversation, and I didn't know who he was. I didn't even know he was a state representative. Now, this is how this is so funny. I first contacted him because about some tree cutting things and that has to do with the job that he does. And we start talking, and then when he said he was a state representative, I'm like, oh, my goodness, I've got to give you my books. You and your wife need to read these books because you'll love them. And so they read them, and he was like, oh, Patricia, I love, love, love these poems. My wife loves, loves, loves these poems. The governor needs to know about you. That's exactly what he called and told me. He said, the governor needs to know about you. And I say, you know what? Yes, that's what I've been saying all along. He needs to know about me. So we laughed about that. And he just, you know, kind of talked to the governor about me and about my poems and things like that. But before that, I received a resolution through the House of Representatives. He was a member of the House of Representatives, so they gave me a resolution in my honor of recognizing my work through my poems of promoting positive images of Mississippi. And I'm telling you, that is one of the highlights of my life, when I was sitting on that, you know, sitting in front of the House of Representatives, and they were reading that resolution and hearing my name over and over. Whereas Patricia Neese Lee Dorsey, whereas, and whereas she, and here for, and oh, you mean chill bumps? I will never, ever, I told my mother, I will never, ever forget that feeling of hearing that in those hallowed halls where all these, you know, all of these laws were made and all of these decisions were made in this state, and just history, that I was a part of history, that resolution was put in the books, and I was a part of history and recognized by my state.
Don't you believe that God, through his infinite big picture, and you know my depth of faith, because you know what I've been through the last couple of years.
Oh,
but God,
yes.
in his infinite, all-knowing
Absolutely.
Wisdom, has a plan for you.
Absolutely. You couldn't even make this stuff up, really. Just the way all these things fell together, you just could not make it up how all of this came together. And like I said, after I had the resolution, then I got a private audience with the governor and got to talk to him about what I do and what I love and, you know, and how I love the state and how I like to promote positive images and everything. And, he proclaimed me as an official Goodwill ambassador. And
speaking,
they issued the little certificate and everything. It's just wonderful.
Speaking of positive images, yeah, you know, us Southerners have a very bad rep because of the way we talk.
Mm-hmm.
Those north of the Mason-Dixon line don't understand our Southernese. Have you guys talked Southern close to you?
Yes, I do.
Would you like to read that one for our audience?
I can. Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, one of our greatest writers in Mississippi is Eudora Welty, and she used a lot of what they call the colloquialism, the way we talk, and dialect and things like that. And I am one who loves to talk country Southern. I love those these and those and cutting off the words and the way we do them and cutting off the G's and ISG's on word. I love it. It's just part of what I love about the South. It's just a beauty to it. And I wrote a poem about talking country Southern. And it's just a conversation of how those little funny words that we say. And it goes, well, I'll be, Lord of mercy, how y'all doing? We ain't seen y'all in a month of Sundays. How your mama and them? Won't y'all sit a spell? We were just fixing to go to the store to make groceries, but it looked like it's coming up a cloud. I reckon we best wait till it blow over. That last storm pretty near blew us away. our mailbox ended up way over yonder in that pasture. Who that with y'all? Oh, that's Johnny's boy. He know he's a spitting image of that man. He showed on growth. He kind of favored his cousin Joe, too. That Joe ain't got a lick of sense, bless his heart. That whole family used to live right up the road a piece. We know all his people.
Now,
and anybody who's from the South will understand that about we know all his people, because when you meet somebody in the South and introduce to somebody's family, they want to know who your people.
And not only that, but bless your heart can be a compliment or it can
absolutely
be an insult.
Absolutely.
And we have a caller. Let's see. Hello, caller. How are you?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes,
we can hear you. Who are we speaking to?
Hi, my name's Fred. How are you?
I'm
great.
Good. How are you, Fred? Do you have a question for Patricia?
Yeah, I do. I'm doing great. I just got back from a week-long trip. It was closer to 2 weeks, actually. I was camping. I was really off the grid. I wasn't using social media, and I really feel great about it.
Good.
Yeah, sometimes you need to take a break from it, you know?
Absolutely. You know, I'm not caught up with world events or anything like that, so I gotta take a few days to do that, I guess, but my question to you tonight is, why do you think certain people in our life just disappear? They disappear out of our life and we lose contact with them. Do you think there's a reason for that?
Patricia, I'm going to let you take that one.
I think there's a reason for everything. I think there is a reason for everything. And there's a little quote that says something, there are people in our life for a reason and for a season. They're not, sometimes people come in and out because they've kind of, the purpose of them being there has gone, you know, and they
right
serve their purpose, and it's time for them to move on, and someone else comes into your life with, you know, it just happens. I think that everything is for a reason.
And I think
so
sometimes we outgrow people.
Sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes yeah, we outgrow people. We
mm-hmm
or they outgrow us. We go
yes
in different directions in our way of thinking and our way of life. And sometimes, and Patricia can
attest, and that's not a bad thing.
No. And sometimes yeah people in our life are toxic and need to go away.
Yes, absolutely. And you have to know that.
You know, it's so funny. Like, even like, you know, you wonder sometimes about certain celebrities. Like, they just disappear off the face of the earth. Like, you know, you wonder what happened to them. It's like people just leave your life. Like, I was thinking the other day, I was seeing something on TV with Mel Brooks, and I thought, like, whatever happened to a guy like Gene Wilder? Like, why don't you see him anymore, you know?
He just died.
Well,
Gene Wilder just died, but people die. And,
he what?
You know, Gene Wilder, the guy who was, you know, Willy Wonka and all that?
Yeah.
He died
last week.
He died?
Yes. He had Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Complications from Alzheimer's.
Oh, my. I loved that. He was one of my favorite actors. You can't. Oh, my goodness.
Well,
I had.
You're in the boat with a lot of people.
Idea.
A lot of people really loved him.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. My wife was his. I got to tell her, babe, Gene Wilder died. Yes. Oh, my God, this is not... She's devastated. It's okay. It's okay, baby. Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. I can't believe this.
Yep.
Baby.
He did, sadly, from complications of Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm coming.
She's screaming in the background here.
Oh, my God.
I hear that.
Not taking it well.
I'm having an asthma
okay
attack.
Okay, well, calm down, baby.
Now I feel like I'm like it's the crucible.
No, baby. We just got back from a long vacation, and we were not expecting that. Oh, my God.
So, Patricia, let's...
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's just been a lot.
I understand.
Well, maybe you all need to just rest a little bit.
Man, it's not. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I had to mute him.
Okay.
Back to our discussion of Southern Mississippi and Southern things. Bless your
yes.
heart can be an insult or can be a compliment. depending on the conversation and what's going on with it.
Absolutely. And every Southerner knows the inflection in which you use it and the context. They know exactly what you mean. And it's just such a wonderful thing because people on the outside are clueless. They don't really know. It sounds so beautiful and flowery. So they're like, oh, that's nice. You said bless her heart. We're blessing people's hearts all the time because bless your heart, I mean, oh my goodness, they're like dumb as a bag of rocks or something. I said bless her heart. They just don't understand.
That dress on her just looks horrible.
Right,
bless
her
heart.
Yeah. Well, then she doesn't know any better, you know.
No, so she can't help but bless her heart.
Right, exactly, right.
We've got, you were talking about your dad earlier and how important your father was
very.
To you with his love of poetry, and this gave you a love of poetry. And in your book, and this was one of the reasons that my dear mother stole my book, because of another poem that you wrote, and we have another caller, but let me see who it is.
Okay.
Hello, caller. Do you have a question for Patricia?
Yes, hi. It's Fred. I'm calling back from my office line. I just wanted to apologize to you ladies about that. That was a shock to us, and thank you for being so kind about it.
Well, you're quite welcome. Patricia, your love of your father and the
mm-hmm.
point that you
My wife just lost her dad, so it's just we're all a little sensitive over here about death right now. That's part of the reason. So I listened to your show before, and you're very kind, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you're quite welcome, sir. You're quite welcome.
It's a really hard, it's a very hard time for us right now.
I understand.
You do for people.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank
God bless you.
Thank you, dear.
God bless you for everything that you do because it's hard sometimes, you know.
Thank you very much. And I know Patricia appreciates it, too.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, this is how you cope with loss, you know. How do you cope with that loss of someone you love?
Well,
like we were saying, our faith in God is something that has kept us through a lot of years and a lot of things. We've talked, like I said, Yvonne and I are sisters in Christ, and that is part of what keeps us going and knowing, you know, our faith in God and our faith in, you know, in that has kept us, and that's part of what we try to share with other people, too.
Yeah. Hang on. My wife has to say hello. Here she is.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, sweetheart?
I've been better. I want to thank you, too, for your show and everything we do for people because it's been a really hard month for us.
Well, we can understand where you're coming from because Patricia and I both have suffered loss, but it's
mm-hmm.
like Patricia says, our deep and abiding faith is what keeps us going. And we know that God's got a plan.
Absolutely.
We don't always know that plan, but God's got a plan, and you have to believe that.
I didn't know that she Wilder had died. I loved her so much.
I understand, sweetheart. But the circle of life, the circle of life does go on.
Yes. Sometimes it's very hard to understand, you know.
But we just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I want to read a poem. I mean, just
go ahead, Patricia.
To say, consolation. If you're always thinking the sky is falling and are henny penny like the old version of me, somebody needs to let you know what will be, will be. No matter how dark the path may look or even how scary the way, be reminded constantly tomorrow's a brand new day. Though many things may go awry, regardless of all the rest, the sun will most assuredly rise in the east and most definitely set in the west. The sun will come out tomorrow. I know it most certainly will. You can't get caught up in worry. Just continue to climb up that hill. Keep your wits about you and negative thoughts at bay. Maintain a positive attitude, and it certainly doesn't hurt to pray. There's light at the end of the tunnel and a rainbow at the end of the storm. But somehow we seem to reason that to worry is simply the norm. My mantra is, it's not that serious. It really never is. They say don't sweat the small stuff, but it's all small through eyes like his. When you've done all that you can do, you've done all that you can do. Somehow you must remember it's simply not up to you. I know you've heard the song that says, the battle is not yours. You must somehow realize it's to the Lord deferred. God says in his word not to worry, for who by worrying can possibly add one cubit to his stature or even one single hair to his head? It's really just that simple. You do what you can do, then give all else to the Lord, and he'll take care of you.
And that is so, so true on many, many levels. We have to give it all to God because God is in charge.
Absolutely.
We are not in charge. We just
Absolutely.
Think we are. And I get really tickled because when people say, well, I believe in God and I have faith, but, and when they add that but on there, I say to them, how can you say that you believe in God and you have faith, but you put a but on there? Because when you put a but on there, that's telling me that you really doubt God's in charge and that God will take care of it, whatever it is.
Hebrews 11, without faith, it's impossible to please God. You know, it's just impossible.
Absolutely.
You have to believe, first step.
And if you pray to God to take care of it, then you have to believe God will take
you.
Yes, because there's things that are totally out of my mantra is exact. If my mantra is this, there's only two options: either I can fix it, or I can't. If I can fix it, I fix it, and I don't worry about it. If I can't fix it, why am I worrying about it?
Right, right.
It's all about God. It's all about faith.
It is. It really is.
Now, let's see if we can get through this poem that is my mother's favorite. Because, again, your father loved poetry.
Yes.
He taught you the love of poetry. And
yes.
I want you to read The Southern Man, if we don't do anything else tonight, because this was our connection. This is what my mother said when she read this poem. She said, Yvonne, Patricia is a member of the Church of Christ. She's one of God's children.
Wow.
So read this poem, if you will.
Southern Man. There's nothing like a Southern man. He's a man that you should know. He's one to whom you'll find no equal anywhere you go. He has a sweet molasses talk and a slow, smooth, gliding walk. He's got strong, firm hands that let you know real work is nothing new. He has no problem with the fact that he should provide for you. There's certain kinds of values this man is sure to hold. His love of home and family is sure to not grow cold. He'll deeply love his mother. It's a bond that's always there. All throughout his life, this man will show her tender care. He's one that you can count on to do the manly things. He'll change the tire and check the oil and fix the backyard swing. But underneath a tough exterior, a gentle soul lies too. He's one who'll rock the baby and even cook a meal or two. On Sundays, he'll sit beside you singing on the same church pew. There's nothing like a Southern man. He's a rare and special kind. If you look forever, anywhere, he's the best you'll ever find.
And that is so, so true.
It is true. And it's so funny because I talk to a lot, I go to a lot of schools, I speak at a lot of schools, and especially when I speak at the junior high and high school level, I tell the girls, I said, you know what, you really need to appreciate our Southern men because they don't make them like that everywhere you go. We have become used to them and the way they've been brought up and the values that they have. But believe me, when you go out of the region and the area, some of those teachings and values are non-existent. And it's so funny because one of my first dates that I was on in Boston was a guy at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. We went out on a date. And when we got up to the door or whatever, I just automatically stopped at the door. And he's like, what happened? And I was like, what, you're not going to open the door? And he was like, he looked at me like, he was like, well, you could open it for me too. And I was like, oh, my goodness, I really need to get back home because that is not the way it goes. You know, I was saying to myself, no.
And let me tell you, when I am out and about and a gentleman – and I use that term very reverently.
Loose,
when a gentleman
right.
allows me to go ahead of him or opens the
yes.
door for me or offers
yes.
to help me with my husband's scooter, the first thing and I don't care if he's 5, 10, 15, 20, or even 80. When a gentleman
right.
does that, I am very quick to tell him, your mother raised you right.
right. Absolutely. And I
because
can't remember that.
Mama.
I ask my son that all the time. I say, people notice that stuff about you. And people come up to me all the time and say, we really appreciate your son. And I say, Henry, do you listen to what they're saying? Because they notice things like when we're going into the church, that you stop and open the door for all the ladies to come in or help the older ladies in or whatever. They notice those kind of things. People notice those things.
And it shows that your son has been taught how to respect
Absolutely.
Women. And
Absolutely.
And these liberal women can say what they want to. I want to be like a man. Do you really?
Right.
Do you really want to be like a man?
Right. I love being a woman, and I love that role of being a woman, and I like being treated special, you know, in those
Amen.
Ways that I'm in. I love that. I revel in it. It's the most wonderful thing in the world.
It makes me feel special.
It does. It really does.
And it makes me
being
feel
warm. Being a woman
warm.
Is a special thing. It
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And I like that respect. And it's not demeaning to me if a man wants to hold the door for me or if a man
Absolutely.
Wants to help me with my husband's scooter or allow me to walk ahead of him into a doorway. To me, that is the epitome of respect that you and I as a woman have earned, not because we demand it. Are commanded. We earn
Absolutely.
That respect.
Absolutely. And I think that's a lot that has gone on in our society, and that's a lot of the problems of the things that are going on in our society now, that a lot of people, and I want to read this poem, have lost the whole concept of passing down rules of life, you know, just normal
Amen.
Everyday rules of how to treat people, how to act, how to be decent in society. We have lost that connection somewhere of teaching the generations that there are ways to act in society, and there are things that are nice to do and that you should do, and that you can't do everything. You can't say everything that you want to say. So I want to read that.
Bless their heart.
Most Southern folks, right. Most Southern folks, girl, stop. most Southern folks have rules we're taught from when we're very young, and most of us throughout our lives to these rules have clung. Life can be much easier when you know what to do or not, and you're sure to learn a lot of them if Southern parents you've got. One of the first rules you come to know is children are to be seen and not heard. It's best if you sit down somewhere quietly as a bird. You always say please when you're asking and thank you when you receive. You address all your elders as ma'am or sir. And if you don't do it, you'll grieve. Don't touch anything in the store. Keep your hands to yourself. If it's not something you plan to buy, leave it soundly on the shelf. Always say good morning soon after you awake, and always greet people pleasantly if friends you are to make. Don't slam a door as you walk out. You don't live in a barn. You better close it gently is what they always warn. If you open a cabinet or anything, always close it back. Once you do it repeatedly, you'll always have the knack. Don't call someone before 8 a.m., and that's my mother's pet peeve, or after 10 at night. If it's something you feel you must do, it's an urge that you must fight. Never ask for food when you visit, although the host may ask. Sometimes it's best if you decline and let the moment pass. These are just a very few of the things we Southerners are taught. Without some rule for every occasion, we are never caught.
That is excellent, and that is so true. We have two callers. Shall we see who they are?
Yes, please.
Okay, hold on. Hi, you're on the air. This is Yvonne, your host. Do you have a question for Patricia?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, well, I was listening to the show prior. I had no idea that Gene Wilder died.
Yes.
Yes, he did.
I just love that motherfucker. He was a great fucking man. And I'm just...
Okay,
This is the same person.
Yeah, it is. I'm not answering any of these because I think they're all the same people.
Yeah.
And this is live radio, ladies and gentlemen. Sadly,
right.
It is live radio. So if we teach our children, and what has happened in our society is our younger generation, for whatever reason, has forgotten their manners.
Yes.
And I'm
afraid
that...
And that's part of what I say about wanting to bridge that gap. And if I can even just prompt the older generation, and I always, because I speak at a lot of groups with historical societies, older people who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, or whatever, and I'm saying, we need to pass our stories down and tell our children and grandchildren where we came from and the kind of rules that we learned and the kind of things that we learned. And it's so important to tell your stories and tell those things that were so important about how Southerners may do and how Southerners know how to make a little something out of almost nothing and all those things that we need to pass on.
And Southerners are a hearty bunch of folks.
Absolutely.
And when you say we learned how to make something out of nothing, we did growing up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We had to.
Absolutely.
And it goes across, as you and I talked about earlier, it doesn't matter what color you are. Growing up, we learned to make do. We were poor folk.
Right. Right. And it just warms my heart because, like I said about my poems, there's something in there for everybody from age 8 to 80 and beyond. And I love that we can bridge those gaps across generational lines because, you know, there's just something that all of us can share, that we can give to each other the knowledge that we have. Like shelling peas, it just really,
warms my heart when I talk to a group of 5 and 6 and 7 year olds, and they say, "My mama told me about that. My papa told me that." And it, you know, that's communication number one. That's talking
yep.
about your stories, your family stories, preserving your family histories, and all those kind of things, of the things that you did growing up, and all of that. And it's funny because some of our kids don't even know that, you know, peas are grown in the ground and come up like that, and then you have to, you know, they think they come from Kroger. Or something.
Honey, I spilled many a peas and shook many a corn and snapped many a green beans.
Right.
At my mama's house. We've got
right.
about 5 minutes left. Take a couple of minutes and tell the folks where they can find you.
Okay, well, my website is patricianeelydorsey.com, and it has all the information about me and about my books. You can get my books on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or any local bookstore will order them for you. But I also want to say, everybody, anybody who's listening who's from Mississippi, please contact your representative in support of Mississippi, Meet My Mississippi, as the state poem. We can actually be a part of making Mississippi history.
And Mississippi is an absolutely beautiful state. And Patricia and I were talking about the Natchez Trace a while ago. The Natchez Trace is so full of history.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It will blow your mind because
absolutely,
you just got to go there, ladies and gentlemen. You got to go to the beautiful state of Mississippi. If for nothing else, and to hunt up Miss Patricia Neely Dorsey and Tupelo.
Right. And maybe I could end with that poem, The Natchez Trace. Indian foot trails turn busy pathways for industrious merchants and weary travelers, burial mounds, battlefields, interesting artifacts, and amazing wildlife at every turn. Scenic route from Natchez to Nashville, history in my own backyard.
See, ladies and gentlemen, you never know what you're going to find when you tune in to Off the Chain with me, your host, Yvonne Mason. Because I have all kinds of interesting guests, and I even have interesting phone calls occasionally.
Yes, it has been off the chain.
It has been off the chain. Yes, ma'am, it has. But and as you all can hear from mine and Patricia's conversation tonight, we are very, very comfortable on this show. And
yes.
Because we know that things can take a detour. We just take that detour
That's
and
right.
get the train back
absolutely.
On track.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And tomorrow night, my guest will be a band out of London, Ontario, and it's called Cypher. Now, these guys contacted me and asked to be on my show, which, again, this show is taken on a life form all of its own. And on Saturday night, my guest will be author Fran Orenstein. She writes for young people, youth, young adult, and even a few adult novels. But this show is as diversified as the people that I have in my life, like Patricia, that have been on this journey with me. This radio show has been a 5-year dream. And when I have people like my friend Patricia and my sister Patricia who honored me, and I say that very humbly, Patricia, honored me with the privilege of being able to interview her and to be able to talk about racial divide and talk about ethnicity divide and talk about how we as people are just people and we love each other because there's no color in our lives except
Absolutely.
Love and kindness. And right quick, Patricia, am I right? You got 30 seconds to say.
What now? I didn't hear that last
you got 30,
part. Something
you got 30 seconds to say how wonderful we are with each other.
Oh, absolutely. Fabulosity.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for being some of my listeners tonight. And, again, as Patricia says, it has been off the chain tonight, but we did get through it. And join me tomorrow night for a two-hour show with the band Cypher. We will be playing some of their music. We will be talking about these guys. And like I said, they're our northern neighbors from London, Ontario. Saturday night is Fran Orenstein. Patricia, my beautiful, beautiful, beautiful friend and sister, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful.
Well, we have to do this again. I have to bring you back after the first of the year, after the poem becomes the state poem.
Yes, absolutely.
And we will revisit this again and talk about how wonderful the South is and how wonderful Mississippi is and how wonderful you are.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will say good night. I will see you and hear you again tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on Off the Chain. This is your host, Yvonne, saying good night.
Good night.
Okay. Thank you, sweetheart. And I will get
all
this
right
up.
Bye-bye.
And send you the links. I'll tag you in them.
Thank you.
I love you, my darling.